Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios here on the program today. An hour later, because Chase and Big Joe are doing a great job in Atlanta at SEC Media Days, Connor Newt is here today. Hello, Connor Newt.
Hello, Jared Stillman.
So it's SEC Media Days, and I've got to start with a little bit of a confession, if I may. Start off with a little bit of a confession. Again, Chase and Joe are doing such a good job at SEC Media Days that they're going to go 12-3 this week, and I'll see everybody at 3 o'clock, which I'm not complaining about. But let me just say this. Somebody has got to explain to me what the allure of SEC Media Days in 2025 is. And the reason I start here is because I watched this morning when Greg Sankey went up to the podium. He walks up. And he puts his binder down, and he looks out at the crowd of the ballroom at whatever hotel they're at. I would assume they're probably at the Omni at CNN Center. That's where it was 7-8 years ago, whenever it was in Atlanta. And he goes, well, it's good news that my notebook fits on the podium. Ha, ha, ha. Let's talk about thinking of the people in Texas with the floods that are. And I'm like, my God, what's the point of this? And I think about what SEC Media Days used to be like. When Clay Travis asked Tim Tebow whether or not he was a virgin. And I think about how much everything has changed in the last 10 or 15 years or whatever it may be. And it hits me. Conference Media Days in college football may be one of my least favorite weeks of the year. And that's no disrespect to Chase and Joe, who are doing a great job. Because, again, we're the Nashville station, so like we're going to get good guests. Like, we're going to get head coaches. We're going to get the commissioner of the SEC. We're going to get all the SEC network people we want. Like, we're going to get all those people because we're one of the largest cities that would go to SEC Media Days. Us, Atlanta, Birmingham. But for the most part, SEC Media Days to me just kind of feels like a scam at this point. It almost feels like the league is taking advantage of these small stations in these small towns to spend their money to drag their asses to Atlanta to interview. Oh, those guys in Dothan, Alabama, no disrespect to them, they're not getting Kirby Smart on their show. And so that's something that bothers me. Like, again, the marketing aspect of this, that all these beat writers of newspapers that, let's not kid ourselves, newspapers are struggling to make it. They all go out to SEC Media Day so they can ask the same coach they're going to see in a week at fall practice a question. So let's drive 8 hours, spend $2,000 on hotels for our dying newspaper so we can get out here and ask coach, coach, how do you feel about the defensive line this year? What's the point of that? But that's not the real reason why I don't like SEC Media Days. The real reason why I don't like SEC Media Days is because at this point in our society, it feels like nobody ever goes there and says anything that matters. For instance, Greg Sankey, he is essentially the leader of the free world when it comes to college football. Kind of like how the president of the United States is not the president of the world, but we know that the president of the United States, with the economy that we have and the nuclear weapons at our disposal, is the leader of the free world. Greg Sankey, with the schools that he oversees, is the leader of the college football pact. And yet he got up there today and had an hour-long press conference and made almost zero definitive statements about the direction of college football when, once again, he is, without a doubt, the single most influential decision maker surrounding the direction of college football. From now on, that's how I'm going to describe the commissioner of the SEC. He is the president of the United States of college football. Yes, there's the European Union. There's China, who I guess I would equate to the Big Ten. Sometimes it feels like the Big Ten's kind of communist anyways. But when you're the commissioner of the SEC, you're the president of the United States of college football. And again, he got up there for an hour, and he didn't make any definitive statements. And it got me thinking about the big moves the SEC has made in the past and the relation to SEC Media Days and whether or not Greg Sankey has given out any hints. Because, again, what I'm trying to figure out is if these guys, if these coaches, if these players, if these administrators, if the commissioner, if they're not going to go and say anything because they don't want to rock the boat, then what is the point of this dog and pony show? To put Paul Finebaum on TV with a backdrop of people behind him so he can say the same things he says every day on SportsCenter anyway? But think about the past moves that have really shaken up college football as far as the SEC is concerned. This decade, there have been two, in my opinion. One is obvious, and it did actually go down at SEC Media Days. That was when Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC. But it was not as if Greg Sankey got up there at the podium and said, "Oh, my binder fits here this year." So as we guide college football forward in the year 2021, in the year 2024, we will be adding Texas and Oklahoma to the Southeastern Conference. No, no, no. What happened was, on the last day of SEC Media Days, Texas A&M went there, told everybody they're adding Texas and Oklahoma just because they were pissed about it. Sankey wanted to have the whole media day, do all the interviews, go through and do all the radio stations, and he didn't want anybody to know that he was going to make this astronomical, monumental change to college football. Because what that did was that led to the Big Ten saying, okay, well, they just got Texas and Oklahoma. Let's go poach USC and UCLA. It essentially killed the Pac-12 and the Rose Bowl. And guaranteed conference expansion. But again, there was no hint they were going to do this. Because every single meaningful move, it feels like, when it comes to college football, is one of those shocking, in the middle of the night, oh my God, can you believe it type things. The second move that the SEC's made over the last 5 years, that again kind of shook up college football, was when the SEC decided to leave CBS and to go with ESPN. Now, that had been coming for a long time. The SEC added A&M in Missouri. They asked CBS to pay more money on what was probably the best deal in television, and CBS said no. And the SEC was pissed about that. But again, it wasn't as if Greg Sankey went to SEC Media Days with everybody that paid all the money it took in order to travel from near and far to be able to hear the commissioner talk, to get up there and say, and it should be noted that we've decided to change our television partners from CBS to ESPN, where everybody's, oh my God, no. It was announced the way it's always announced, you know, breaking news, so-and-so reports. And then he went on the Paul Finebaum show and said, we've decided to join ESPN ABC. So it leads me to this. What's the point? If these people aren't going to say anything, these coaches fly a private jet from wherever they're going into wherever the city that it's holding the conference media days. They fly a private jet with three players and an army full of assistants. And they go up there, they do interviews for like 3 hours, they say nothing, they get back on the jet and come home. It's like 60 grand worth of expenses. For what? That's what I'm trying to figure out. What is the point if Greg Sankey's just going to get up there and kind of say something and kind of not say something? And if the coach is going to get up there and talk about every player on the depth chart, and if the coach is going to say, we've been working hard all summer, and we're this, and we, you know, our boys are ready to play, and we're really excited. We're looking forward to Southeastern Lafayette State Tech, which is coming up here in about 2 weeks. We're very, very excited about it. Somebody enlighten me. And this takes me back to the last time that the SEC Media Days were in Atlanta. Connor, I'm going to let you in on a story. How old were you in 2018?
I was 14.
14 years old. Holy crap. Phew, I'm old now. So in 2018 at the SEC Media Days in Atlanta, Floyd and I were there. And, you know, we would go, especially because Floyd had the connection, we'd get Nick Saban on the show. And it's hilarious because ESPN basically stole our Nick Saban interview. and they had a behind the scenes show on Alabama. And it was really like, you even watch it and it's Saban, me and Floyd. And they just mic'd Saban up and took the interview and ran it on ESPN, which I'm fine with. But that was, but that's not the story I'm going to tell. So we get to Atlanta and I'm just depressed. And I don't know why I'm depressed. And I texted my dad and I said, man, I'm not sure I have the same joy of doing the radio show that I've always had. And my dad texted me back and he said, hey, you know, football season's right around the corner. And at this point, the Predators were coming off the President's Trophy. So that was a pretty big high of a year. You know, hey, the football's right around the corner and they'll be right back into it. Don't worry about it. It's just kind of a slow period. That's what it is. Don't get, you know, my dad just texted me, it's okay. It'll be better, whatever. That day, Aaron Murray, the old quarterback at Georgia, came on our show again. That's what this is like. Oh, hey, let's get Jordan Rodgers on. Again, we can get Jordan Rodgers on the show whenever we want. But that's what SEC Media Days is. So we had Aaron Murray, the old Georgia quarterback. Jeremy Pruitt was the new coach at Tennessee. And we taped an interview with Aaron Murray. And I was asking, you know, the same old generic questions you ask everybody. What do you think about Tennessee this year? And Aaron Murray made some comment about how he didn't think Jeremy Pruitt was going to be a good coach. By the way, he was right. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he was like, well, there were just some things in Georgia when he was the defensive coordinator with Coach Richt that I heard of that I didn't like. And Coach Richt, he didn't treat him with respect. And I'm like, ooh, it's kind of juicy. And so I'm sitting there listening to this, knowing that we're taping this back at the station. I texted Joe Rexroad, who at the time was writing for the Tennessean. And I said to Joe, I go, yo, Aaron Murray just came on our show and just crapped all over Jeremy Pruitt. Joe was like, really? I was like, yeah. And he's like, send it to me. So I had Ian send Joe the cut. Again, Joe didn't work for us at the time. Joe was working at the Tennessean. I had Ian send Joe the cut. And I told Joe, we're going to run the interview at 3:45, so just wait, or 3:30, so just wait until 3:45. And at 3:45 on the dot, the Knoxville News Sentinel, which is the Knoxville version of the Tennessean owned by Gannett, released a story about Aaron Murray on Jeremy Pruitt. The next day, I went on for a run around Atlanta, you know, like the Battery in Atlanta where we were staying. And when I got back into the hotel room, I turned on the TV and Paul Feinbaum was on TV. I do not care what Aaron Murray has to say about Jeremy Pruitt. And again, back to that conversation I had with my dad about being depressed. I was like, ha ha, back in the game, baby. That's right. But it made me realize that what used to be like, hey, we haven't talked college football all summer long in college football. Let's talk to all the coaches. Let's get the real stories out there. Let's get, that's gone. That's gone. That doesn't exist anymore. There's no need for that now with everybody having a podcast and everybody having 8 writers that cover the team that write for Rivals and 24/7 and On3 and JohnnyJoe.com and all of it. And all these guys do is they go there and they try to be as non-confrontational and as uninteresting as possible. And they're taking the proud money of the fine folks at the small little Fox Sports radio affiliate in Dothan, Alabama, while they're doing it. So if I could make any request as far as conference media days are concerned, I would ask the league, give us something interesting with these conference media days. I don't need to see the panel of ex-SEC players up there debate if LSU is going to win 9 games or 10 games for the umpteenth time, because I don't really care. And I just don't think that many other people do either. So with conference media days kicking off, with everybody, they call it talking season, I have one request. Be interesting, please. Say something. Please. I mean, that's quite frankly, that's how I feel about it. And I understand, like, I listened when we get Clark Lee on, and tomorrow we'll have Josh Heupel, and when we get those guys on, like, I'm listening to that. But outside of that, it's like, man, I'll never forget when the Titans signed DeAndre Hopkins. The SEC Media Days were in Nashville, and Caroline and I were on the lake the day before. I told Caroline, I was like, look, man, when I get to Media Days, like, we're talking DeAndre Hopkins. Because I don't think the people in Nashville driving their cars around want to talk about Mississippi State football when the Titans just signed DeAndre Hopkins. Greg McElroy sat down with us at the table, and I looked at him. I said, you want to talk DeAndre Hopkins to the Titans? He said, sure. I said, all right, sounds good to me. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. There is one thing that Greg Sankey, I think, actually said. Now, you had to be looking for this when he said it today. And Lord, I hope I'm right about this. As far as the future of college football is concerned, we'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.
Speaking of expansion, I felt the first year of the 12-year college football playoff was a success. That doesn't mean everything was perfect, and there are certainly opportunities to improve. But what happened through the 12-team college football playoff is we brought teams into the conversation at a time when they would have been talking about their bowl game. We brought teams into the national championship conversation, so the young people on those teams had that national championship competition access point.
There you go. That was Greg Sankey today talking about the college football playoff and what's the future and so on and so forth. But there was one thing, as I was listening to Greg Sankey's press conference today, and I guess I was listening to it because it is kind of my job to know what the commissioner said, even though I know he's going to get up there and say nothing. And boy, there was a lot of nothing that was said. You know, a lot of non-committal stuff, which is the whole point, right? When he's ready to commit to something, he'll tell you. Like, you're not going to ask Greg Sankey a question and Greg Sankey give you some sort of answer in which he's going to commit to something or put himself in a position that he's not ready to put himself in. And I understand that, but kind of defeats the purpose, in my opinion, of the whole press conference. But Greg Sankey was talking about the college football playoff, and there was a legal term he used, which is an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, which is essentially a contract without it being a full contract. If I were to ask you to build me a pool, and you said, okay, I'll build you a pool, Jared Stillman, but it'll cost $100,000. And we agree to it. We'd sign an MOU, and then we'd eventually get all the other details hammered out in a contract. And Sankey, when being asked about the future of the automatic qualifiers in the college football playoff, kept highlighting this MOU, which I think was a message to the Big Ten, play the cut.
We have agreed, and I think last week there was some misunderstanding communicated about a memorandum of understanding. So in that memorandum of understanding, the top five conference champions have a role. So that's, unless you're going to go tear up the MOU, which maybe some other people want to do because of their concerns about the decision-making authority, that very clearly in that memorandum of understanding is granted to the combination of the SEC and Big Ten. Ultimately, we have to use that authority with great wisdom and discretion. But unless people want to tear it up, we're going to have 5+7, 5+9, 5+11. As I understand, you know, doubling down, so that was one of the phrases last week. That's part of a gambling experience, as I understand. And you always want to have a really good set of cards.
Do you think that Greg Sankey doesn't know what doubling down means? Like, do you really think, again, this is so Greg Sankey. As I understand, doubling down is a gambling term. Greg, you mean to tell me you've never been to the blackjack table, you've never gotten a 7 and a 3 versus a 6, and you wouldn't know what to do? I mean, I know Greg Sankey loves that boring commissioner vibe that he gives out there. That Ben Stein kind of monotone, dreadfully boring, buttoned up lawyer type approach. But you mean to tell me this guy knows nothing about blackjack? Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you whether or not he has sex with his socks on or anything like that. But it does feel like he went out of his way to basically be like, apparently the gambling, which I don't know anything about, uses the term doubling down. Give me a break. Okay, play the rest of it.
As I understand, you know, doubling down. So that was one of the phrases last week. That's part of a gambling experience, as I understand. And you always want to have a really good set of cards. You want to have a good hand to play, right? And I think we have the best hand to play. So we're going to operate consistent with the MOU. There's an allocation of those five spots. And I guess we'll continue to debate whether expansion beyond 12 is appropriate for the college football playoff.
Oh, Tony Battiti and the Big Ten ain't going to like that. They are not going to like that because he just told you for an entire week where all these people go to Atlanta and they don't say anything. He just told you, we're not going to do the 4-4-2-2 model. It's not going to happen. We are not going to have four automatic qualifiers for the Big Ten. I'm sorry about it, Tony. And he talked about the MOU. Again, the memorandum of understanding that has been signed. The agreement. We agreed to this. We put our name down on it, in which we said five automatic qualifiers, period. And when it comes to that phrase, I don't know too much about doubling down because I don't gamble, Greg Sankey. When it comes to doubling down, you better have the best cards. And we got the best cards. The Big Ten does not have the best cards. And I completely agree. Because as I've said many times, you know, again, Caroline is sold that this 4-4-2-2 model should be what they'd go with in college football. I do not understand how she could believe that. She's too smart for that, but apparently she is absolutely sold on this. The point being, Greg Sankey has said he's not doing that. We agreed to five automatic qualifiers, and so if it's 5+7, which is a 12-team playoff, if it's 5+9, which is a 14-team playoff, if it's 5+11, which is a 16-team playoff, then that's what it will be. Now, we can get discussing expansion if we want to go to 14 or 16 teams. But as far as changing how we get the 4-4-2, that's not going to happen. And so of all the non-definitive statements that were made today, for all of the one foot over here and one foot over there, talking out of both sides of the mouth, again, the unwillingness to commit to anything, the one thing I think Greg Sankey did commit to today is we agreed five automatic qualifiers, and that's it. And we're not doing any more. We agreed to it. We in the Big Ten make all the decisions. Again, I still think Notre Dame's involved in this because I just don't think we could do college football without Notre Dame getting a say in this. But we in the Big Ten make all the decisions, and we know that. But we agreed, including the Big Ten, to the five automatic qualifiers, and we're going to stick to that. So I don't want to hear any bullcrap from the Big Ten who's going to come out and talk all about this 4-4-2-2. I mean, Joel Klatt, one of the most disingenuous propaganda interviews I've ever heard in my life, sat down with the commissioner of the Big Ten, and he said, when all this stuff about 5-11 started coming out, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I kept thinking to myself that that came out of left field. I'm like, no, it didn't, Joel. That's what we do now. We do 5+7. That's what we do now. Again, it's a joke. It's a joke. But I at least appreciate Greg Sankey saying, like, we're not doing this. We're not going to go to the 4-4-2-2 model so that the Big Ten can save their TV contracts with CBS and NBC. Because, again, that's what I believe this is all about. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in, we'll get to your phones here on the program. A lot of people do want to weigh in on this. And plus, there's another thing that I guess they keep talking about as far as the SEC is concerned. Whenever I talk to Caroline about this, as far as the playoff and her belief of the 4-4-2-2 model, this is what she says. This is why she says they should do it. And I must be the only person in America who does not give a rat's ass about this. What that is that I don't give a rat's ass about, we'll get to next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.
It is absolutely, fully, 100% correct that in the SEC we play 8 conference games while some others play 9 conference games. Never been a secret. Second, it's also correct that last season, all 16 members of the Southeastern Conference played at least 9 games against what you would label power opponents. We had several that played 10 of their 12 games against power opponents. Some conferences have that, some don't. The same will be true this year. And we have Washington State, and we're obviously transitioning in the Pac-12 that's included in that group. And we again have several of our football teams that have 10 of those power games embedded within their schedule. I don't believe there's anyone looking to swap their conference schedule and its opponents with the opponents played by Southeastern Conference teams in our conference schedule, be it 8 or 9.
There you go. That was Greg Sankey today talking about the difference between 8 games and 9 games. Yes, I know the SEC has 8 conference games, and other conferences have 9 conference games. We believe that our 8 games with the Power 5 game that everybody else plays is just as good, if not better, than everybody else's. And I do not think that there is a team out there that would trade their schedule with that of the SEC's. Now, I may sound like an old pawpaw with what I'm about to say here. And remember, Caroline says I hate college football, which I don't understand how I can spend so much time watching it on Saturday and hate it. But I do not give a rat's ass if the SEC plays 8 conference games or if the SEC plays 9 conference games. And I have a serious question, which is, who does care about this? Like, is there a Florida Gator fan who cannot sleep at night because they're like, well, if we don't go to a 9-game schedule, Jared, then we're not going to play UT every year because we're going to play Georgia every year, and then they're going to change other opponents on us, and I can't sleep, Jared. I can't do it. Is there one person out there who really, truly cares? There's only one person that should actually care about whether or not the SEC plays 8 games or 9 games. And to me, that's Lafayette State Tech Junior College. Because if the SEC goes to 9 games, then Lafayette State Tech Junior College is probably not going to get to play Alabama this year. And that's $2 million down the drain that they get by losing 73-6. But also, as a spectator, isn't that kind of a good thing? No more Lafayette State Tech games. Sold. And yet, all I hear about when it comes to the SEC is 8 games and 9 games. And but the Big Ten, they play 9 games and 8 games. And again, who cares? And let me say this. Sankey's onto something. Because if you play Rutgers and Northwestern and Iowa and those Big Ten schools, is it really the same as playing an extra game against LSU? You know the answer to that. And if we stay at 8 games, who's upset about that? Again, is there a Tennessee fan that's sitting there saying, no, Jared, oh God, I can't do 8 SEC games. I have to have that extra Mississippi State game on the schedule. I got to have it. Because I'm not. I mean, I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. Tennessee doesn't want to go to 9 SEC games. Because if they go to 9 SEC games, that means Alabama is on the schedule every year again, and you probably don't want that. And Tennessee doesn't want to play the toughest schedule. I know this because when Nebraska canceled with them, they had a chance to play Louisville. A very good chance to replace it with Louisville. Instead, they decided to play Georgia Tech. Why? Because Georgia Tech ain't that good. That's why. But, I mean, again, what SEC football fan is staying up at night thinking, oh my God, if we play 8 SEC games, we're not going to get to play Kentucky every year. What are we going to do? And I just have to believe that this goes back to it's 4 days where the SEC puts on this dog and pony show. And they feel like that they have to pass the time. You know, college football is the one sport where I truly feel like there's really just not enough to say about it. What I mean by that is the people that love college football, they freaking love it. Like, they love it. Like, they live it, breathe it, die it. The Paul Feinbaum listener. Just everything. So what was good about that was you had college football season, which was really, you know, September through November. But they lied. And they would say it's more like August through January, just to spread out the schedule. Then there'd be the recruiting period when National Signing Day used to matter, because with National Signing Day, there used to be some sense of like, hey, we signed Johnny Joseph and he's not ready yet out of high school, but he's going to be really good. And now it's like, again, who cares who signs out of high school? Everybody that signed out of high school, with the exception of Arch Manning, is on another team now anyways. Pass on that. And then people used to care about spring football. Now nobody cares about spring football. You add players after spring football, so nobody cares about that anymore. So, again, the Josh Pates of the world, they have a show to do every day. And so they have to find something to talk about. And this 8 versus 9 games in the conference schedule, that's all this is. This is something for them to talk about. The Joe Rexroads of the world. Joe Rexroad is a college football writer for 12 months out of the year. But the problem is that pretty much every month, with the exception of September, October, and November, there's really not a lot of college football going on. So they have to make up things. That's where I think they get this 8-game, 9-game thing from, is they just have to have something to bitch about, and so this is what it's going to be. The 8 games versus the 9 games. Again, somebody tell me, who is an SEC fan who actually cares about 8 league games or 9 league games? Not the Bubba at UT Martin who cares because if we don't play that game against Tennessee, we may not be able to afford women's volleyball. But I'm talking about like an SEC fan. You're a Auburn fan. Do you really care about that extra game? Well, darn it, Jared, we're not going to get to play Kentucky this year. You'll be okay. Phone lines are by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Matthew from Jolton says, the last two national champions have not had an SEC team in the game. Washington, now in the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame. But the SEC has the best cards, according to Greg Sankey. Best cards, my butt, Matthew from Jolton says. Here's what I would say. How many elite programs belong in each of the Power 5 conferences? I say Power 5, but you know what I mean, Power 4. Let's start with the Big 12. 0. Arizona State, no. Colorado, no. BYU, no. Utah, no. Again, I'm talking about an elite program. 0 in the Big 12. How many in the ACC? I'd argue 2. Clemson and Miami. I'm not putting Florida State in there, even though Florida State does have a nice program. It's a very good program. But I'm not sure I'd put Florida State on the same level as LSU. So I'm going to say 2. Clemson and Miami. Now, I do think that North Carolina matters, because North Carolina does have a basketball element to it, and it's a state in the South the SEC doesn't have. But 2. Now to the Big Ten. How many elite programs belong in the Big Ten? Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, give you Oregon, Penn State, USC. That's 5. Is there another school in that conference that you would consider to be an elite program? Not Michigan State, not Iowa. Connor Newt, is there a program in the Big Ten outside of the 5 I've listed that you could make a legitimate argument to say that is a national power?
No, sir.
So that's five. And I feel like we're stretching it with Penn State and USC, but I'm going to allow both of them. That takes us to the SEC. Alabama, Auburn, Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia, Florida, LSU, Tennessee, Oklahoma. Right now I'm at nine. The SEC has the best cards. Again, think about it from a television standpoint. The Big Ten is desperate to get these play-in games to give to CBS and NBC, I believe, because CBS and NBC's packages stink. Nevada at Penn State as the number two game? I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. And not only that, NBC has the primetime package, and Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State will not play night games after the month of September. So it's pretty much going to be all tier two, tier three Oregon games that are there, which, again, Oregon's a good program, but, I mean, I'm sorry. Nobody's going to be excited about Nebraska, Oregon, and that's what NBC's paying for. So I'm just telling you right now, when it comes to the cards, Greg Sankey absolutely has the best cards because he has the best TV matchups. Because his second and third TV matchup every year or every week is significantly better than the Big Ten's second or third matchup. I mean, last year, when it came to the top games, they were pretty much all SEC games and Ohio State. Now, Ohio State draws. That is legit. But there's only one Ohio State. In fact, here were the highest rated games last year. The SEC championship game was the highest rated game. The second highest rated game was Georgia versus Texas. The third was Michigan-Ohio State, then Georgia-Alabama, then Penn State-Oregon in the Big Ten championship, Alabama-Tennessee, Tennessee versus Georgia, Ohio State-Penn State, Ohio State-Oregon, Texas-Michigan, Texas-Texas A&M. You add to, before you get to a Big Ten non-Ohio State game, and the Michigan-Texas game doesn't count because, again, that included an SEC team in there, but a legitimate straight-up Big Ten game. Like, I am scrolling down the list, and I cannot find one. I mean, I've got Georgia and Kentucky at 6.6 million. USC-Michigan is the number one Big Ten game outside of the Big Ten championship game that did not feature Ohio State. It was the 26th highest rated game of the year, and it did not beat Alabama-Oklahoma or Iowa State-Arizona State. Give me a break. 615-737-1025. I do have a Vanderbilt thought. They were up today at the podium, and they were on Chase and Big Joe. I'll get to that next. Snowman and Company, 1025, 106 through the game.
I know there's a lot of guys returning, a lot of guys have left and all that, but how much do you bounce off of that for this year?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I think both good and bad. You know, I mean, we talk about it, you know. It's a shared experience. I mean, that's our learning. So for us, it's hey, let's go back to Virginia Tech. Let's think about some of the things that happened in that game where we had a really commanding lead and then we let it slip. Some of that is their counterpunching. Some of that is us learning how to sustain and to win. Let's talk about Georgia State. Let's get back in those moments. Let's relive November where, you know, coming out of the Auburn game, we felt like we had the right energy going into the game and weren't able to sustain performance against South Carolina, against LSU, and against Tennessee. What is it going to take for us to win in November? Those are conversations that pretty much every time I'm in front of the team, some variation of that is being talked about in addition to the things that are right in front of us. So it's shared learning. It's our experience. It's what we need to draw from to improve.
There you go. That was Clark Lee on with Chase and Big Joe earlier today at SEC Media Days. And let me just say this when it comes to Vanderbilt, they were up at the podium today. You know, Vanderbilt, after what they did last year, and it really is the win at against Alabama. You know, people will say, you know, hey, well, they still had a really good season outside of the win against Alabama, and that's true. And when Clark Lee talked about, you know, that win at Alabama was great, but there were a lot of moments last year that I look back on that I'm like, man, those were just as good, if not better. He talked about the Virginia Tech game. I think the fact that Vanderbilt followed up the win against Alabama with the win at Kentucky the way that they did as a no, we're not going to spend all week smelling our own farts. We're going to focus on Kentucky, and we're going to go try to win that. I thought that was good, too. But there is kind of a blessing and a curse here. As of right now, Vanderbilt is not a joke. Vandy's not a joke. It's not the same old Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has a player that most people around the country know of, Diego Pavia. You can be one of these college football podcasters who's trying to fill the time and say stupid things like, Diego Pavia ain't that good. Yeah, okay, let me see your quarterback go beat Alabama single-handedly. Drop 40 on him. But Diego Pavia is a star. And because of that, Vandy's not a joke. But Vandy's only not a joke until we kick the ball off this year. And Vanderbilt's going to have to do everything they did last year, but it's going to be even harder. Because their schedule now has Alabama on the road. That game's not at home. I'm not going to sit here and tell you today that they're not going to win that game, but I feel fairly confident that they're not going to win that game. Alabama is not going to overlook them, and Alabama is playing at home. And every game that they played on the road last year, for whatever reason, the SEC's done it this way, now it's on the road. Every game they played, every game on the road is now at home. So they have to go to Texas. Again, I'm not sure they're going to win that game. In fact, I feel fairly certain that they're not. They have to go to UT. They host LSU this year. Well, guess what? LSU is not going to lay down for Vanderbilt, just like they didn't lay down for Vanderbilt last year, because once Vanderbilt beat Alabama, everybody knew you have to take Vandy seriously. So after the offseason, everybody this year is taking Vanderbilt seriously. Vanderbilt is at SEC Media Days, and again, they're being taken seriously. But you're only going to be taken seriously as long as you remain serious. It's going to be hard for Vanderbilt after the year they had last year where there were a lot of close games that went their way. I know that they lost the Georgia State, whatever. They lost that game. That didn't go their way, and that was a close game. And they lost the Missouri game in overtime. That was a close game. That didn't go their way. But Alabama was a close game. Could have gone either way. It went their way. Virginia Tech was a close game. Could have gone either way. It went their way. It's going to be tough to win those games this year. But as of right now, you got to give credit where credit is due. Because the credit belongs with Clark Lee, that took a team that won two games in 2023. And traditionally, for my entire life here in Nashville, and Clark's too, and he played there, has been considered a joke. And as of right now, it's not a joke anymore. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Matthew says, as a Tennessee fan, I do care about the 8 or 9 games because I don't want to lose the big rivalry games like Bama, Florida, Kentucky, or Vanderbilt. Well, you're only going to be able to keep 3 if you go to 9. And I think for Tennessee, it's going to be Florida, Alabama, and Vandy. If you stay at 8, you get Vandy. Truth be told, I think from a strategic standpoint, you're better off at 8 than you are 9, where you have to play one game out of conference that's not going to be Alabama or what is traditionally Florida. One texter said, they play Alabama every year, Jared. I said, not since Texas and Oklahoma joined the league. You got to catch up with the new rules. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number. That's 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in. Okay, so I made note about these top 10 lists that ESPN has, in which almost no Titans have made the list. It's so bad other than Jeffrey Simmons, no Titans players made the list. And Peter Skoronski got an honorable mention at the guard position that people were like, ah, honorable mention. Yeah, baby. And it's like, holy crap. It's like, oh my God, that's how sad it is. But the quarterback list came out today. Now, Cam Ward is not eligible for the list. And I don't know if you guys understand this or not, but Will Levis did not make the top 10. But there was one thing about the list that may be what Cam Ward has to emulate. I just don't know if he can. We'll get to that next. Somebody, Company, 125 The Game.